This is a podcast from the Queen City Podcast Network.
In this episode, we're talking about the R word, recession. For the past several months, there's been buzz about whether the American economy is headed toward a recession. Is a recession in our future? We're asking an economics professor.
Right now, there's a better than 50% chance that we'll see a recession in early 23.
This is WBTV's Good Question. We are joined now by Professor John Connaughton, Professor of Financial Economics at UNC Charlotte. Thank you for being here, sir.
My pleasure.
First things first, tell me a little bit about how long you've been at UNC Charlotte and how long you've been studying economics.
Well, I'm a little embarrassed to say how long I've been an economist, but it's pushing 50 years now. Wow. I've been here since 1978. So,
wow. Don't be embarrassed about that. You should be proud. That's very awesome. I wanted to ask you today about the R word, recession, and get some of just the basic information about it and anything you'd like to add. But wanted to start with, how do you explain what a recession is to the average American citizen?
Well, unfortunately, there's been a lot of miscommunication about recession in the last few months. We've been throwing around the concept that successive quarters of decline in real GDP is a recession. And that's an old rule of thumb, but it's neither a necessary nor sufficient condition. Recessions are defined by a group of economists at the National Bureau of Economic Research. They're in the Business Cycle Dating Organization. And they look at a wide range of factors, one of them being real GDP. But that's just one of six factors they look at. And they have not called this a recession yet. And I'm pretty sure that we are not in a recession. And primarily because other important factors that we look at to determine if we're in a recession are things like labor market conditions and retail sales. And as we all know, labor market couldn't be any better if you're an employee. Not so good for employers, but for working folks, it's pretty darn good with a 3.5% rate of unemployment. So the labor market's fine. We also have a pretty strong retail sales. So a lot of things, manufacturing activity is another one that they look at, and that's pretty solid as well. So yeah, we had two quarters of decline in real GDP in the first and second quarters of this year, but I don't think that was enough to call a recession based on the NBER definition of a recession. So, and right now there's the Atlanta Fed has what they call a GDP tracker, and their latest information about what third quarter GDP is going to look like is positive. Right now, the tracker suggests that third quarter GDP, which ended in September 30th, is going to be about a 2.5% real growth. So that does not marry together with what we're looking at and calling us in a recession at this time. But wait, there's more.
You know, you brought up an interesting point with the definition there. I thought it was so interesting that with the pandemic, you hear the top health officials declare we are officially in a pandemic. Is it like that with a recession in economics? Does a governing body or some sort of governance have to say we are officially in a recession?
Okay, first of all, the National Bureau of Economic Research is not a government body. Uh-huh. And their business cycle dating committee is basically professional economists who've been researching in this area for literally decades. Uh-huh. Their best judgment, as I said, they look at a wide range of factors before they call it. What's interesting about the NBER business cycle dating group is that they're not interested in being the first one out there suggesting we're in a recession. They're interested in being right. So typically we don't really know when they call the recession beginning until we're well into a recession, okay? Because they're more focused on being right. And the same is true when we come out of it. They don't let us know until 6 to 9 months after we're out of it. And then they see all the data and they say, okay, yeah, that recession is over and we're moving in. Now, this business cycle dating goes all the way back to 1854. Wow. So there are 34 recessions that they've chronicled. And so I'm pretty trustworthy, or I place a lot of trust in what they're doing in terms of calling when a recession occurs.
And you said, correct me if I'm wrong, but right now you do not believe we are in a recession.
No, I don't think that we're in a recession right now. And I think the third quarter GDP number, if the Atlanta Fed tracker, GDP tracker is correct, is going to pretty much, how can you be in a recession in a quarter where you have 2.8% growth in GDP and you have a 3.5% rate of unemployment? Yeah, we've got a problem in the economy. We've got inflation, but I don't think we have a recession. And it, also, Alex, one of the interesting things here is that the first two quarter GDP drops that we saw, 1.6 and 0.6, I think were the numbers, was an anomaly, and it was principally caused by a decline in productivity. And you know that we had never seen that level of decline in productivity before. So that's really what caused it. And there are a lot of factors that led to the decline in productivity, but I think the first quarter productivity dropped by about 7.4%. We have to go all the way back to 47 to see a quarter where productivity dropped by that much, all the way back to 1947. And we've never seen two quarters in a row drop by 7.4 and 4.6%, I think were the numbers. In terms of decline in productivity. That is a rare occurrence. And a lot of that had to do with supply chain issues. Mm. A lot of that had to do with remote working. A lot of that had to do with incredibly tight labor markets where we're bringing people into jobs that they weren't fully trained for. And so productivity declined. And that's really what led to the first and second quarter declines in real GDP was a productivity issue.
Thank you for breaking that down. That being said, are we on the up and up now, or do you think we're still kind of in like a period of instability?
Yeah, we're in a period of instability. We are sitting around at this point in time waiting for the recession to happen.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, the Fed is trying their best to curb inflation. Mm-hmm. They don't have all the tools they need. They're not given all the tools they need. They can only affect the demand side of the economy. By reducing consumer demand, by raising interest rates. I mean, that's really the only policy tool they have. They can't do anything about the supply side problems that are creating inflation, only the demand side problems. And so they've been raising interest rates. They've had three in a row, 75 basis point increases. And a number of Fed FOMC members are suggesting that they need to do two more in the November meeting and again in the December meeting.
Wow.
And, you know, that would place the federal funds rate above 4% by the end of the year. And so it, because they waited so long before they started raising rates, they came to the party probably 6 to 9 months late when during 2021 they were talking about, well, this is really only transitory. We don't have to worry about it. It'll sort itself out. Turned out that wasn't the case. And so now we've had a year of pretty significant inflationary increases month to month. And so it becomes much harder after inflation becomes ingrained in the economy to curb it with a so-called soft landing. So it's more likely that the Fed action that they're going to take in the remaining two meetings this year are likely going to toss us into a recession in 2023.
I know I'm not an econ student, but can you explain as easy as possible what raising the rate actually does to curb inflation?
Real simple. It reduces consumer demand and it reduces business demand. Mm-hmm. Couple of things. Interest rates go up. It costs more to buy a car now because most people buy it on time, monthly payment. The monthly payment goes up when the interest rates for car loans right now is pushing 6%. Home mortgage rates are above 6%. Mm-hmm. It makes it much more difficult and less affordable to buy houses, so people buy fewer houses. So on the consumption side, those two things are very important in terms of curbing consumer demand for essentially big ticket items, houses and cars. At business side, investing in new plant and equipment now becomes a lot more costly. Firms are less likely to do it with higher interest rates to borrow money to buy that equipment. And so business investment goes down. And those are the two big components in GDP. Consumption is 70% of GDP. Business investment's another 16 or so percent of GDP. Those are both being dampened down by these increases in interest rates.
So we hear these network news reports. I know at the local level, we hear the network reports coming down and they say, you know, the Fed is raising the interest rate, trying to curb inflation, but there are fears that this will plunge us into a recession. Can you explain that balancing act and exactly what the thought process is?
Okay. So this is kind of involved, but it can't simply be explained.
Okay.
So we'll go through it. It's no problem. So here's what's going on. Inflation has two root causes. One is what we call demand pull inflation. That's too many dollars chasing too few goods. There's just this pile of goods over here. People get more dollars than they need to buy these goods. So the goods become scarce, and so people bid the prices up. Mm-hmm. That's what happened in 2020, coming out of the pandemic with all the stimulus, the $6 trillion of stimulus between 2020 and early 21. And that created an incredible increase in consumer demand and government demand for goods and services. The second cause of inflation came along a little later. That's what we call cost push inflation. That's when costs to produce things go up and therefore prices have to increase for those goods. And that was principally caused by supply chain issues brought about initially by the pandemic and this kind of random rolling sets of closures that took place in lots of firms in lots of different countries rolling over time, and therefore the inability to increase the pile of those goods that people would bid prices up for. And those are the first two causes. But now we're in a period of time now where we have an inflationary expectation issue. And that is both consumers and businesses expect prices to go up in this inflationary environment. And so they test the waters, they run prices up a little bit, see consumers balk, consumers say, well, the prices are going up, you know, they've been going up now for a year and a half. You know, what am I going to do? I got to have food. I got to have gas. I got to have this.
Right.
And that's the hardest one to crack. You know, the Fed can do something about the demand side. They can reduce consumers' discretionary income, discretionary purchases by raising interest rates and making the big ticket items more costly to purchase. They can't do much about the supply side, and inflationary expectations really don't start being curbed until people start losing their jobs. That's the sad fact about it, but that's the truth. And so, yes, they talk a good game about, oh, yeah, we can have a so-called soft landing. We can time this just right. But the fact of the matter is there's a pretty good size 6 to 9 month lag between the point in time in which we implement monetary policy until we start to see some kind of a result. And so, you know, right now they're implementing monetary policy, raising the interest rate, but they won't know how effective it is until probably May, June of 2023. Oof. Yeah. So you got to guess that, yeah, this has been the right amount. What they're talking about is, okay, we'll do two more good size raises, 75 basis point raises in November and December, and then we'll pause for a couple of months. We won't come back, but we'll pause at that rate. We'll take a look and see what's going on before we raise rates more. And that's an attempt to try to create the soft landing. But there's a danger in that, and that is that it doesn't go far enough and inflation keeps rolling along. So it's not an exact science. It's very much an art. And right now, my concern is that we still see such strength in labor market that, you know, so far, I've really seen little impact that the increase in interest rates have had much of an effect on consumer demand.
Gotcha. But you are saying that we won't truly know what the impact of the raising of the rate will be until the summer, the next summer.
Yeah, we won't really know until late spring and summer what's really going on. We may see some signs early in the year next year, but you know, the unemployment rate going from 3.5% to 3.7 or 3.8, hey, that's still full employment. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, creeping up a tenth of a point here and a tenth of a point there is not a true indication that we're really biting into curbing the inflationary spiral that we're in.
I don't know if this is taboo with your line of work. Do you like to predict where we're headed? Can you say right now how you're feeling? Like, Alex, it's looking like a recession.
We give percentages in terms of the likelihood of something happening.
And
I think right now, there's a better than 50% chance that we'll see a recession in early 23.
Okay.
So it's probably, I would say I'm 60 or 70% certain that we will probably see a recession in the first half of next year.
And is that, would you say, unavoidable right now?
If Fed goes ahead and does 275 basis points or a 75 and a 50, I think that's pretty much unavoidable. Yeah.
Okay. So, and this could be 100% an ignorant question. Why keep bumping up the rate then if it's definitely, I think you see where I'm trying to go here. Is it better to have the recession?
Most people are concerned more about their job and their livelihood than they are about inflation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, long-term inflation can wreck an economy and create both high unemployment and high inflation. So we've got to curb this thing. I mean, the Fed, Jerome Powell, he was late to the party, but it seems like he's drunk the juice, so to speak, and he's on board now with, in fact, curbing job one, curbing inflation.
Okay.
Now, by the way, and if even if they're successful and if they send us into a recession, we're not going to see get back to 2% inflation for another 18 months to 2 years. So it's going to be 24 or 25 before we actually get back to that 2% inflation we've had for the last several decades.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a nasty phenomena,
right,
that does not go away easily. And sometimes, and Paul has said this in the last three speeches or two speeches in a press conference Jerome Powell has had, he's made it perfectly clear that he understands that there's likely to be pain involved in this.
Okay. And I think you pretty much answered my question there, though, but it's better in the long term to have the recession and curb inflation.
Right, than to go through the period of time we had the 70s, where for 10 years, the Fed just chased inflation. Alex, it's kind of like herding cows. You know, if you chase after cows, the cows just run after you, run away from you. You got to get out in front of the cows to turn the herd and make them go the other direction. And that requires, you know, that's why cowboys ride horses, okay? So they can get up, never mind this.
I see where you were going with that one, though.
Yeah.
Okay, just like you were embarrassed to admit how long you had been in the economics field, I am embarrassed to say that in 2008, I was still in high school. But I remember that being such a dark time and hard on a lot of businesses and Americans. Is that what we're looking at? Or could this be a...
No, I think this is much more like what we experienced in 2001.
Okay.
I think the recession, that was a 16-month recession, and the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. It was a really slow recovery because it was a financial crisis recession. Banks were severely hurt by the losses and the bubbles in the real estate industry. And as a result of that, we had essentially zombie banks for several years after the recession was officially over, and they weren't actually behaving like banks. They had the signs out there, we're a bank, but they weren't doing banking things like lending money to people with 650 or even 700 credit scores. And that really put a damper on the rate of recovery. That's not what we're going to experience. The banks are in pretty good shape right now.
Okay.
What we're doing with raising interest rates at this point and the demand side, the demand pull inflation that we have and even some of the cost push, it's really got nothing to do with banks. And so I think that we'll be fine. We're not going to have a great, miraculously quick recovery, mm-hmm. but we're going to have a much milder recession. Unemployment's not going to reach 10% like okay. it did in 2008. Or nine, actually. No, we're looking at probably a peak unemployment rate that'll be less than 7%, probably in the low six range at worst.
Okay.
Probably 6 to 8 month recession and probably a reasonable 2 year recovery out of it.
Gotcha. But not a situation where, you know, you have just half of Americans fearing that they're going to lose their job at any moment.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That is a good information there. Any general financial advice you have for people, if we are heading towards an unavoidable recession in the summer of 23, any just general financial advice you would give to people?
Well, you know, generally speaking, you would like to have everybody's financial house in order and not be overextended when things start falling and people start losing their jobs. And so, you know, that's the one thing to make sure you've got several months of savings available for you and make sure that you're not overextended on your credit cards and other big ticket item purchases. So, yeah. But ironically, Alex, when people start doing that and heeding that advice and start preparing themselves for what could be a downturn, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy because they're cutting back on consumption and that will in fact slow the economy. So, yeah.
Oh my goodness. It's such a process and it's tough to wrap my head around some of it, but it's very, very fascinating. Professor, anything else you'd like to add that I didn't touch on?
No, I think we've covered pretty much everything from inflation to recession, the two big evils in the economy.
Yeah. How much of this was spurred by the pandemic? Was this coming anyway? I know folks like to say, throw the cyclical word around with the economy. Was this?
No, actually, prior to the pandemic, the economy had expanded for 128 months. That's 10 and a half years consecutively without a decline.
Wow.
And so, you know, that was the longest expansion on record going all the way back to 1854. So it was not inevitable. I mean, we caused this, and whether that was the right thing to do. But it was an incredibly short. It was only a 2 month recession, just 2 months, April and May. That's it, gone, end, and recovered very, very quickly. The problem was in the process of recovering. I think Congress felt so guilty they just got crazy, And, you know, hey, by comparison, we all know and you know how bad the 2008-9 recession was, right? Mm-hmm. You throw TARP out because TARP ultimately got, that's a troubled asset relief program to help banks bail out. That all got paid back to the government.
Okay.
With interest. Wow. So the government spent $750 to help shore up the financial sector. They got about $780 back. Okay. The actual American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, which was the stimulus package, by comparison, in that it was only $787 billion, less than $1 trillion. And here we spent $6 trillion for almost a nothing recession.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad for a couple of months.
Yeah.
But by August, everything was back on track. And by the time the vaccine came out, it was
rolling again.
It was rolling.
Yeah.
And yet we were still stimulating. $6 trillion versus less than $1 trillion. Circle the one that doesn't fit.
Right, right. Just you made me think of one other question. You mentioned the messaging. How much does politics come into play when you hear people, you know, saying, hey, we're in a recession, or no, we're not in a recession? And where do you tell people to actually look for their information if they're trying to figure out where we stand?
Well, certainly cable news is not a place to look for information. Okay. Mm-hmm. They are the problem and not the solution to the problem. That's both sides of the aisle. You know, in terms of looking for information, you know, it's publications like the Wall Street Journal, the Economist. Those are the place, the magazine, the Economist weekly magazine. Those are the places you go look for information. You know, it's not a sexy subject. It's not something people talk about at dinner parties. So, you know, it's kind of the over here in the gray part of the world we live in. But you know, if you just pay attention to what's going on in the labor market, first Friday of every month, 8:30 in the morning, that'll help you. There's a release.
Jobs report.
And then the same thing, the quarterly GDP release. Next one's coming up, I think, October 27th, just before the election. But to answer your question about, you know, how much of what's going on in Washington is politics versus good economics, it's 100% versus 0%.
Oh, my gosh. A lot to wrap our heads around. Professor John Connaughton, professor of financial economics at UNC Charlotte. I appreciate it, sir.
My pleasure.
WBTV's Good Question is a product of WBTV in cooperation with Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media. From WBTV, Good Question is produced by Jack Vandertal. Special thanks to Jamie Bowl. For the Queen City Podcast Network, WBTV's Good Question is produced by Brian Baltashevitz and Maria Delgado. Production coordinator, Taylor Robinson. It is recorded at the Queen City Podcast Network studios in Uptown Charlotte.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.